The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, August 17th, 2007, and this is show number 91. I am your host, Bob Hayes. First of all, let's talk about today's show. We've got some really good stuff on tap. We've got a call with Chris Johnham, the editor of Road Racer X magazine, which is an excellent magazine. I've talked about it on the show before. Got him on the phone. It's a neat call. And then Jules and I do a fairly long conversation about the silly season and where we're at so far with what we know and what we think we know and what we just sort of plain old think of what's going to be happening here in silly season. And we should be getting some answers here very shortly. We've got the Brno coming up, end of the summer break. This is great. Brno's racing this weekend. U.S. viewers, it's back on Speed. So make sure you look for Speed Channel if you're going to watch it on television. It's not on Fox or CBS. It's back on Speed. And they at Brno, we should be hearing some of the final answers of these remaining questions of where our rider's going to be. So Jules and I are talking about that a little bit, about what we know right now, and then we'll sort of maybe compare and contrast of how wrong we were or how right we were, as the case may be, later on. Couple things before we get to all of that. I do want to send a shout out, a big thank you to a couple of contributions. Kevin Whitaker sent a contribution in. This is the second week in a row. So thank you very much, Kevin. I appreciate that. It's really awesome for you to do that. And also Timothy McCartney sending a contribution for MotoGPOD, help pay the Skype bills and the bandwidth and all that stuff, the expenses of MotoGPOD. So thank you very much, guys. I do appreciate that. Always really grateful for that. Then we had iTunes reviews. You guys responded in great force for iTunes reviews. It numbers went way up of the number of reviews, and that did improve the iTunes ranking in the featured of the category that MotoGP OD is in, which is the sports professional category. And, you know, it's kind of cool. It's getting us up there a little bit, maybe getting a little more notice on the show. More people will hear about it. That's kind of cool. And, sort of an ego gratification. I liked a lot of the reviews too. Thank you very much to everybody who did that, for all of your kind words and whatnot. And also I thought the reviews were fair. There was a couple that were, you know, they only put 4 stars out of 5, that kind of thing. You know, so I like that too. I thought it was cool. Like I said earlier, if you're going to do a review, you know, if you like the show, say you like the show. If you don't like the show, say you don't like the show. I like to be fair. Fair is good. Although if you don't like the show, you're probably not listening to it, especially after this point. But whatever. One of the reviews I thought was cool. This is from BB in MI, which I assume is Michigan. BB in Michigan. His MotoGPOD is the best racing podcast I've listened to, but the host sounds more like he's been working for NPR than Speed. But like NPR hosts, he has passion and knowledge of the subject and isn't another gibbering moron. He did say that the show is good but long-winded. And I appreciate that little constructive criticism. Thank you very much, BB, and thanks very much for the NPR comment. I've always compared the MotoGPOD to the NPR of motorsport, because if you wanted the, say, I don't know, Howard Stern or Rush Limbaugh or Don Imus or any of those kind of annoying guys of motorsport, then you'd listen to something else. So this is the NPR of motorsport, and I kind of like it that way. So thanks very much again for those iTunes reviews. Thanks very much for the contributions. Do appreciate it. Like I said, we've got Brno coming up. That's going to be a cool thing, ending the summer break. We've had quite a few press releases coming out, as always. And both Kawasaki and Suzuki managed to get in check puns, which I thought was a little nauseating. Suzuki said they were checking out, and Kawasaki said they were checking in. So enough with the check puns, guys. I'd rather have the rolling hills of Tuscany type of press release than that. Another thing that has popped up on the radar lately, Mark Tinley did a classic bike podcast, and this was almost 3 years ago that he put this first one, 100 Years of British Motorcycling, and it's up on iTunes, and you can find it on his website at funnymachine.com/classicbike. So basically why this is popping up on the radar now is he's added another episode, and these are kind of cool because he's capturing the sounds of these really old motorcycles. These are vintage old motorcycles, and it's kind of neat. neat, so I encourage you to check that out too. funnymachine.com/classicbike, or you can find it in iTunes. If you search for Classic Bike, you'll find his podcast. There's a couple episodes, and he has promised that more will be coming down the pipe here very, very shortly. Then we also have our contest. We had the contest. We had a great return for the contest. A lot of entries. Appreciate that. You guys are great. Everybody's out there doing, you know, entering the contest. And this was a contest to win the Eddie Lawson posters. I was going to give away 6. We had such a great turnout. I think I can give away 10. There's 10 in that poster pile. And well, actually, there's a few more than that. And that'll still leave a couple that we can have for a later contest. But in any event, we've got 10 winners. And why don't we go ahead and announce their names? They're Ted Audia, Christopher Curtin, Corey Solovey, Don Rhodes, Graham Dawson, John Kelly, John Shelton, Joshua Davis, Raymond Valley, and Richard Zane. Congratulations, guys. You all won a Eddie Lawson poster. This is cool stuff. I'll be mailing those out next week. I think I have just about everybody's address. There's one or two missing. I'll be emailing you guys offline to find out what your address is and all of that kind of thing. And thank you, everybody, for participating. And it's kind of fun to do a contest and that kind of stuff. So, all right. I think that that's going to about cover. Now, we're not really doing much of a Brno preview, which kind of a little bit missing the boat, but we went so long on our Chris Johnham call and the Jules conversation that I think we're going to stick with that. So why don't we go right into it? And we also have a book review. I almost forgot to mention that. Yeah. We not only have Chris Johnham and Jules Cheesick on the show, but I'm actually reviewing a book. I got a copy of Top Dead Center by Kevin Cameron, and I talk about that a little bit. So we're going to go into all of that right now. We're going to start off with Chris Johnham from Road Racer X. All right, I got Chris Johnham, editor of Road Racer X magazine, on the phone here. Thanks a lot for taking some time to talk to us, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for speaking with me, Bob.
No problem. Basically, when we talked about doing this interview, one of the things I said is, you know, you've got a dream job there, and MotoGPOD listeners would love to hear about it. So why don't we talk a little bit about you? How'd you line up this dream job?
Yeah, well, it's it's kind of a mixture of a lot of paying a lot of dues over the years, and then also being in the right place at the right time. I worked at Cycle News off and on for 10 years, primarily covering dirt bikes off road and motocross and supercross, and then so through that I met the guys at Racer X magazine, which I don't know if your listeners are familiar with. It's a motocross magazine that's very popular, and Davey Coombs is the editor of that magazine, and so I had met him through my job at Cycle News. And when he was ready to start his new magazine, I asked him to throw my name in the hat, and got lucky. And I actually, to be honest, had to kind of educate myself and get up to speed quite a bit on the road race side of things. I'd always kind of followed it, but not as closely as I would have liked when I was starting the new magazine. But I've definitely drank the Kool-Aid, and we're just about finished with our 5th year now, and I'm a complete convert now.
Cool. So you basically are the founding editor of Road Racer X. So you've been with us since the inception. How is the magazine being received? I mean, has it been successful?
Yeah, it has. I mean, it is a somewhat of a niche market, and we realized that from the beginning, that you know, it's you're writing to people who American people primarily, who are very interested in motorcycle racing. So automatically you're ruling out a lot of people, but given that, I think we're very happy with it. It's grown steadily, and I guess probably almost as importantly, it's got the followers that it does have are very dedicated and passionate, and so the people that like it really like it, if that makes any sense.
No, yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and I understand what you mean. So, you know, a small targeted audience, and that
yeah.
So, and your masthead is starting to look kind of like a who's who of American racers. I mean, you got a lot of good contributors in there. Nicky Hayden, Colin Edwards, Randy Mamola. I'm just flipping through it right now. How are you lining all these guys up? Do they come to you? Do you go to them?
It's some of each. Honestly, usually it's us going to them. but they almost always are happy to come on board, whether it's as a regular columnist like those people you mentioned, or just kind of a one-shot deal. We've got a cool story coming in our next issue, which is at the printer right now, from Roger Lee Hayden on his experience at his MotoGP debut at the Red Bull USGP. So stuff like that, you know, we realize that as much as we like to flatter ourselves, our readers really care about the riders more than they do us. They don't, and you know, so when we actually are able to get a writer to contribute to the magazine, it always goes over really well with the readers.
I'll bet. And that's Roger Hayden. I'm wondering, is he as good of an article writer as he is as kind of a quote machine? Some of the quotes from Roger are just the best.
Yeah. He pretty much is. Yeah. I mean, it's Roger, as you mentioned, can always be counted on for a good one-liner. And he's got such a great personality, because it's just kind of hard to put your finger on him. You know, you can never really tell if he's joking, because he kind of does these one-liners without really cracking a smile sometimes, and I think that comes through in his writing too.
Cool. We're definitely looking forward to that. And then let's see, other things that you've got going on. You've got a book coming out that's going to be out, what, hit the end of August here?
Yeah, actually I think it might actually be even earlier than that. We had at the Red Bull USGP, that's kind of where the debut was, and we had some copies there that were airshipped over from the printer, which is in Asia, and sold out of those actually on Friday. So obviously we didn't bring enough, but the ocean shipment is supposed to arrive, I believe. The publisher, last time I talked to him, told me the middle of August. Now I think they're talking about, so it's if you can find out exactly when if you go to www.bullpublishing.com, B-U-L-L. Publishing.com, and they should have the latest as far as when it's expected to hit there.
Okay, we will. I'll put a link for that on the show, of course. And for listeners
Thank
that
you.
Don't know, this is a book, a biography about the Haydens. And now, did this originally start off as just it was going to be Nicky Hayden, and then you morphed into all of them, or?
Yeah, well, actually, that was my initial idea when I approached the Hayden, or I approached Nicky and the Haydens management, International Racers. Was a book on Nicky, and this was quite some time ago, probably two and a half, three years ago, and they were interested, you know, and said, you know, we'll talk about it and get back to you, and that's kind of, I kind of left it at that. And then when they did get back to me, it was with the idea of doing it on all three, and I was like, first I was like, yeah, three biographies in one. And then the more I kind of got into it, the more I realized that was really the right way to do it. It was a really a fun story to tell, and I was very lucky to be the one to get the opportunity to do so. It was a little bit challenging because it's, like I said, it's three stories in one. It starts off, obviously, the early years there, it's all kind of the same story, but then they all kind of branch off into their own careers, you know. And it was a little challenging to weave that all together, but it was also very gratifying, and it makes for a great story that they have, and I hopefully I did a good enough job of telling that story.
But would you say, when you were writing that book, what was your whole process? How much did you visit the Haydens in person, and did you go to Owensboro? There's all sorts of questions I'm kind of curious about the book.
Yeah. Well, once we decided to go ahead and do it, I knew that the area that I was weakest in was the early years, their childhood years before they were famous. So I went back to Owensboro for a couple day trip, but I was just at their house for one full day. And shot a few photos and basically just sat down with the three brothers and talked and sat down with Earl and talked and just got a bunch of information and meat primarily from the early years. And I went back home and worked on that for a long time and tried to get it all digested and organized. And then from time to time I would call them back to get information for some of the later chapters. I also talked a lot to other people from their careers. You know, I got a lot of quotes from, ex-mechanics or team managers or friends or other riders, and tried to work that all in there as well. And they have a house in California that I went to once or twice to kind of get, as I was finishing up the book, to kind of get some of the last few missing details and stuff. So it was kind of weird. The early chapters were a lot harder to write because it took a lot more research and a lot more work and a lot more organizing. Whereas the later chapters, I knew the material much better and was able to write about it off the top of my head pretty much in a lot of cases. However, the early chapters were actually my favorites and actually the most fun to work on. It was a lot of work, but it was also very interesting work. So it was really fun to learn about what the family was like back then. And in some ways, they're exactly the same family as they are now. There's just a lot of cool stories from back then that I had no idea about.
Right, yeah, with growing up, and I remember the one about the leaky roof or whatever that didn't get fixed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yeah. So, yeah, yeah. It's a neat story, and it's one of those, I remember reading when Nikki Hayden won the 600 Super Sport Championship, AMA Championship. Was that 98, I think, 99?
I think it was 99, yeah.
And, and you read about this, and it's like he was... still a junior in high school. And I'm thinking, how cool is that?
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of funny. Like they were, because Earl and Rose insisted that they finish high school, that they graduate high school, and they were, especially Nikki and Roger, because Tommy was always, he was the older brother. So sometimes by the time he was discovered or whatever, it was a year or two, he was a year or two older than by the time his younger brothers were discovered. And Nikki and Roger in particular, when they were in high school, they were making, six digits or whatever and having, not that they lived large or anything like that, but I think one thing I got from them was that it was sometimes hard to fly back from a test, take a red eye back from a test and show up to class the next day. And you've got money in the bank. You've got a profession, a serious, you're a serious professional athlete, and you're trying to pay attention in English class or whatever. I think it was a challenge, especially their senior years. And it's kind of funny to hear them talk about it, but I think it's pretty indicative of what kind of parents Earl and Rose are, that they really insisted that they all three finish high school, no matter how much it seemed like it wasn't necessary,
Sure. No, I think that's a really good thing. So, and kind of continuing on, you've moved to France for this this year, correct? But right now we're talking, and you're in Kathmandu. So, what's going on in Kathmandu? First of all, then we'll talk about France.
Oh, you didn't hear about the MotoGP round they're having here next week?
No, I didn't. Wow, that's a travel nightmare.
No, it's not exactly the hotbed of motorcycle racing here, as you know. My wife and I are in the process of doing an international adoption, so sometimes we've actually spent a fair amount of time over here this year, and more than we had planned on. It's kind of biting into our European adventure a little bit, but we're just kind of rolling with the punches and trying to make the most out of it. But hopefully we'll get back to France here pretty soon. Because it's nice here and everything, but I do miss being right in the heart of international road racing, in Europe in general, not that France is, but just Europe and Italy and Spain and everything.
Correct, right. So that's really cool. It's kind of a nice thing that you're doing over there. I was kind of wondering, and I looked around and I didn't see any sort of, what is he, a big mountain climbing fan or something? I mean, why is he in Kathmandu? But now we know.
Yeah.
So So that's cool. Congratulations on that. And then when you say back to being in France and everything, you've been doing quite a bit of traveling and everything. Like, for instance, are you going to be making the Brno round? Are you going to travel back to Europe for that?
No, I don't think I'll be back in time for that one, unfortunately. I am disappointed in that because I went last year and I was surprised about what a cool race it was. I'm hoping I'll be back over there in time for Misano, which, is the first one at Misano since Wayne Rainey was paralyzed in 93, I believe it was. It sounds like it's going to be a really big, exciting race. I think, anybody who knows anything about Mugello knows what MotoGP in Italy is like. And this one, I don't know, it could even be bigger just because, it's closer to where a lot of the riders are from, like Valentino Rossi and Marco Melandri and a couple other guys are from there. And it's a big, big area for motorcycle racing. So Mugello's crazy enough. I hate to imagine what this one could be like.
Yeah. I mean, and it is really cool, you know, adding another, in effect, another Italian round, you know, that's officially the GP
right.
San Marino. Yeah. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Talking about the whole motorcycle racing thing and your chances to go to all these races and all of that, you've turned into quite the racing fan. Does it feel, though, somewhat to a point that some of the newness is wearing off at all, or is it, you know, becoming, you ever get that feeling that it's kind of the same old thing at all?
It's definitely a good question. It changes. You know, I still really look forward to it, to going to the races and enjoy it. It's not always as fresh maybe as it once was. But as long as I continue to learn and be able to find challenges in it, I think I'll continue to enjoy going. I mean, it's just such a exciting, vibrant scene that it's hard to not really get caught up in it, you know. Also, you know, I don't go to – I think if I went to every single round during the season, it would be a lot easier to get burned out on it. There's a lot of guys that do that, and it's a really hard job. They really get worn down from the travel and the deadlines and everything. For me, you know, I go to probably maybe – well, typically I'll go to four or five a year. This year I'll probably go to more than that, but I think I've probably gone to about five or six so far. And because I'm not going to every single one, it definitely keeps it. It definitely helps. It I don't get nearly as burned out as I think as some of those guys do.
That makes a lot of sense. And then also, I mean, it's Road Racer X. It's not like MotoGP X. So you're covering all sorts of other things. So have you been able to make any of the AMA rounds or World Superbike rounds or anything like that this year too?
Yeah, you're right. And it's that is a challenge of the magazine, is to try to keep your head around all the different aspects of it. In the past, I've kind of tried to be a jack of all trades. And this year, with me being temporarily living in France, we have decided as a magazine to have me kind of focus more on the European or more on the international scene, and then our senior editor Laurel Allen has really picked up the slack on the AMA. She had already been kind of picking it up last year, and this year she's pretty much our go-to person on the AMA Superbike series, so that's been a huge help. She's doing a really good job. And as far as me on the European side of things, well, I did attend Daytona and then, of course, the Laguna, the AMA races at Laguna. But that will probably be it this year, and I do miss it. And I do sometimes feel that, you know, I would be better off if I were able to go to more of those. But it was, you know, it was a conscious decision that this was a great opportunity for me, and I've picked up so much on the European side that it's been good. I actually haven't been to a World Superbike round yet this year, I really want to do that. I really enjoy that scene because it's a little bit more laid back than MotoGP. The problem right now, one of the problems is our continued, my wife and I continue to have to come back to Kathmandu, so it's kind of put a crimp in some of my plans. But also, to be honest, it's a little, it's not as high on the radar screen of for our readers, that series at the moment, because there's no American rider and there's no American rounds. But I think that's going to be changing here in the near future. At least as far as the rounds go, it sounds like there's probably going to be one next year. So I think we're going to have to make it a point to pick up the slack a bit. We've had some. We had a nice interview with Max Biaggi this year and some other stuff, but no real big features other than that.
Yeah, and that's one thing, you know, when you're working with so many different series, is you do have to sort of pick and choose. I mean, because there's also, if you wanted to really get crazy, there's, you know, British Superbikes, Australian, you know, there's so many. Every country has a series. They're all good. They all have something to offer. It's just, you know, the magazine is only so big.
Exactly, and actually, that's you're absolutely right. And that's one thing that we really try to, we don't want to get away from, is having some of these cool little off the wall stories on. You know, I hope to get to a British Superbike round this year too, and like we had a story on actually a French Superbike race. You know, so we want to, when our readers open the magazine, we want them to be surprised every issue. Not that every story will be a surprise, but we want there to be a surprise in each issue to where they're like, whoa, that's good. I didn't expect that one, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. That's one thing I like about the magazine is that there is always, you know, it's not just trying to tell me the results of a race that happened, well, you know, quite some time ago with publishing deadlines and all that.
Yeah, and anytime we do like if I go to a race and write a story, I know I'm not going there to write a race report. You know, there's other sources out there that do that. They do it very well, and there's no need for us to do that. So we always try to come up with a different spin on stuff, and it's a challenge to come up with those ideas. But when you can, it makes it a lot of fun. And if we have fun writing the story, then hopefully the readers will have fun reading the story.
What do you get for feedback from readers of the, you know, we want more of this? What's the biggest question that people want?
Actually, it's hard to pin it down because they want a little bit of everything. To be honest, the letters we get, and this is the God's honest truth, people are very happy with what we're doing overall. But there are always people that want more of something else. And like you said, there's only so many pages. So if we're not doing something, then if we decide to start doing it, then we have to take out something else. But I guess the most recent one is I got an email from a guy that wanted more coverage of amateur, or not necessarily amateur, but privateer racers. And that's something that is valid, and we do try to get that in there every so often. But it's also hard to do in a way that satisfies everybody because there's a lot of those guys out there, and you know we can't write a story on each of them. So what we have to do is try to write a story that relates to them. You know, maybe the guy had a point. We actually haven't done that lately, so it's something that maybe we should try to start doing here again in the future.
Yeah, I'm not trying to put you on the spot here with rethinking your whole magazine thing. There are other publications that deal a lot more with the with privateers and other series.
That's true. I mean, for us, the bread and butter is always going to be the celebrities of the sport. You know, that's for lack of a better term. I mean, that's just. That's just what we are, but we are, you know, we don't want to consider ourselves too good for anybody or too cool for anybody. So I think there's some good privateer stories out there that deserve to be told.
Oh, sure there are. There's tons. Yeah. All kinds of stuff. But, you know, like you said, you got to fit it all in. Let's see. So it's talking about, while we're on the topic of different round races, different racing series throughout the world. Mm-hmm. Let's move away from the magazine a little bit. And you, as an editor that's sort of seeing all this, seeing the big picture, between MotoGP, World Superbikes, and AMA, which one do you think is this year is sort of just showing us the most exciting racing? And if you had a guy come up to you and say, hey, I'm interested in motorcycle racing, what should I watch? What would you tell that guy to watch?
Wow, that's another really good question. You know, I guess if I were going to say, you know, to watch it on TV, I would say I would probably say AMA Super Sport. just as far as close racing, you know, I think that's one of the series out there that just has the best closest racing. I mean, just look at Laguna, you know. I mean, unfortunately, those guys didn't get to race at Mid-Ohio with the rain out, but Laguna, I mean, was a great race, and it tends to be great racing. Obviously, in Superbike, the racing is great between the top two guys, but there's a pretty big gap after that. And in MotoGP this year, I love MotoGP, and I, if I'm honest, I'd say it's probably, for me to attend a race, that's my favorite series. But I'm not sure that this new 800 rule has really helped the racing. I'm not saying I'm against it, because I think it's done some good things, but as far as if what you like is close racing and tough passes and stuff like that, I think that although there have been a couple races like that, in general I'd say the racing hasn't been as close, which is kind of weird because the lap times are actually closer in qualifying and stuff. But I think that these bikes are harder to they're easier to ride, but they're harder to exploit for a great rider. I've kind of lost my train of thought here, but it seems like the gaps are a little bit bigger in the actual MotoGP races. I will say one of the most exciting things to watch is a MotoGP qualifying session, which they don't televise in the U.S., but the last 5-10 minutes of a MotoGP qualifying session is really tough to beat as far as just edge of your seat excitement and dynamic show.
Sure,
it's really exciting. Yeah,
it is. It's neat stuff, and it's very cool stuff. So that's an interesting viewpoint. The AMA Supersport is not the one I would have thought. I mean, not that you're right. I mean, it is. It's a fantastic series this year. It's a lot of good close racing and all of that. But, yeah, that's kind of an interesting take on things. Okay, and then one thing we had last year that we didn't get this year was the Red Bull USGP podcasts. What happened on that one?
Well, Red Bull decided to kind of up the ante and do an actual video cast, and it's called the After the Flag video cast, something like that. And it's on you can find it on the MotoGP.com website as well as Red Bull's website. But to step it up to that level, they needed somebody that was going to be going to all the rounds, and that's what they decided to replace the podcast with. And it's actually, I have to say, it's a step up, and it's pretty impressive. And the guys that are doing it go to all the races, and they do a really good job. And I've had enough on my plate that I don't mind it one bit. You know, it was fun to do last year, and it's something that I wouldn't mind at all being involved again with in the future. But for this year, anyway, it was a welcome break, and like I said, they've definitely come up with a good thing.
Yeah, completely understandable. And that MotoGP After the Flag, if you haven't subscribed, you can find it on the MotoGP.com website. It's also in iTunes. It's a video podcast that's really well done with Gavin Emmett and Matthew Roberts. And unfortunately, it's somewhat suffering from the same problem that all the MotoGP podcast does, which is very sporadic frequency.
I noticed that.
But and a video podcast is a huge amount of work. An audio podcast is hard enough, but I can't imagine doing a video podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's they definitely set a big goal for themselves, and I don't know what their goal was as far as the frequency, but the ones that they do come out with are quite impressive as far as just a really polished show and a professional presentation, you know.
Exactly. I mean, it is. It's like a regular television show, you know, without the commercials, all the same production values, and they could easily put that on network television, and nobody would say, you know, what's this doing here? So
exactly.
Well, all right. I think we've taken enough of your time, which thank you very much for spending the time on the show with us here, Chris. It's been fun.
No, it's my pleasure. I always like to hear from you, Bob, and thanks again for having me on.
No problem. And yeah, thanks you. Thanks to you very much for the occasional plug that we get in the Road Racer Head online column that you can find at roadracerx.com, which I think a lot of my listeners already know about that and keep going back to, but it's always worth a plug. And okay. We'll appreciate it, and we'll talk to you later, Chris.
Okay, thanks. Talk to you later.
Here in the United States, there's two primary general interest motorcycling magazines. There's Motorcyclist and there's Cycle World. And in my opinion, there's two reasons to read Cycle World magazine. One of those is Peter Egan for his Leanings column, excellent stuff. And the other one, and perhaps more important, is Kevin Cameron for his Top Dead Center column and his feature articles that he writes. Now, the good news is that Kevin Cameron has published all 30 years of writings into a book. It's called Top Dead Center, The Best of Kevin Cameron from Cycle World Magazine. This is published by Motor Books International. It's just a fantastic book. You've got 51 different pieces selected, like I said, over 30 years from Cycle World, divided into four sections. The first section is called The Racing Life, and this is primarily stuff from the 70s, where he's talking about actually being a race mechanic and fabricating the exhausts and machining and just all kinds of great stuff, living in vans, traveling to Daytona. The life that he was leading there while he was working as a mechanic for race teams, and then moving on somewhat to covering the racing and just the whole thing of bringing it all together, all the great stuff about how it is to be a racer. And it's from a technical side of view, of course, because Kevin Cameron's articles are very technical. This is the Top Dead Center column. But it's great stuff. Then it moves on. In the second section is the racers, and he's talking specifically about the great races of our time. You got Gary Nixon, Kenny Roberts, Max Biaggi, Mick Doohan, Valentino Rossi, and many others. He's talking about their attitudes and how they act and their characters and what makes these guys tick and just all sorts of things. Third part is Moguls, Mavens, and Mechanics. And here he's looking at some of the great names that we've seen in motorcycling history. Everyone from Soichiro Honda, an excellent write-up on John Britton. Jeremy Burgess is in there. Rob Muzzy. All kinds of great people and the names that have made motorcycling more special over the years. Articles about those. And then the last section is Inner Workings, which is more along the lines of what we kind of think of as a Kevin Cameron column, where it's very technically oriented, talking about the specific things that the factories do to get more power out of machines and how things work. You know, comparisons of even simple stuff when you're talking about comparing a four-stroke to a two-stroke and some of the things that he has to say here of why they sound differently and things like that. And he puts it in such a easy to read yet incredibly technical sort of style of exactly what's going on and comparing the amount of energy in 5 gallons of gas compared to other forms of energy, 10,000 pounds of batteries, stuff like this. And it's just an interesting read, a fascinating book. It was kind of intended originally to read some excerpts from it and kind of go through and make a nice book review about it and talk about it a little bit. And every time I turned to it, I would read the entire section and then continue reading and everything. So of course I ended up reading the entire book, basically had to go back through and sort of read some sections of it twice. Learned a lot. I kind of remembered some of the articles from having seen them, but most of them were new to me, and even the ones that I had ticked off of memory, they were new and fresh again, and it was cool to read them. Like I said, it's covering 30 years, so that was way before I was reading Cycle World, but there's all the way up till some recent stuff. It's an excellent book. I encourage you to check it out. Like I said, it's published by Motorbooks International. You can find them at motorbooks.com. The book retails for $29.95. They have a good discount there at motorbooks.com. And, of course, it's also available in bookstores everywhere. So look for that. It's Top Dead Center by Kevin Cameron. Well worth a read. All right. We got Jules Cheesick on the phone. Hey, Jules, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Bob.
And we were thinking we were going to talk a little bit about what we've got going on in silly season. It's kind of shaping up. It's shaping up and shaking out, and we're coming to the end where some decisions have to be made, and that musical chairs game is going to finally end. So what do you think, Jules?
Definitely by the end of this week we're going to have some news, because Caparossi's manager has said that there'll be an announcement probably by the time that this podcast is being edited finally. So maybe you might even have the news that we don't have right now before you output the show. And then a lot of announcements that I think are going to happen after this weekend. Things are shaking out, and even though it's the teams talk about this being a half season, we're actually more than half the season in terms of races, and typically this is the time of the year when we start hearing the announcements. It was, there was only one year where we had to wait until really late in the year to find out the really important stuff. Was when Rossi went to Yamaha. It was like, there's so many rumors, but it wasn't confirmed until like after the season ended. So that was pretty crazy. I think, we'll know all the good stuff fairly soon this year, I think.
I tend to agree. I think that we're going to get a lot of answers going on from Bruno, particularly, like you say, Caparossi. Some of the other stuff is going to be up in the air right till the end. You just don't know with Team KR,
yep,
some of these others. But why don't we kind of go down with what we know and do a quick recap on that, and then we'll start Rumor Central going on with what we think we know.
That's right. So then the absolutely 100% positive thing that we know is that there is a Ducati team with Casey Stoner and Marco Melandri next year. The third bike option for Caparossi is pretty much a no-go. So I think that's the factory team. So there's no real surprise there. I think everybody knew that Ducati wanted to have an Italian on board, and Melandri is a great choice. We'll see how he's had a strange season on the Honda with the Bridgestones. We'll see how he does on the Ducati next year. We know he's fast. We know he's capable of doing extremely well at certain tracks. Now, if he just picks up his game everywhere else, he's one of those guys who could be an extremely good contender for the championship.
I agree. I think next year for Ducati could be a seminal year, if you will. I mean, they're doing so well this year. I mean, Stoner is. And if Melandri gets on the ball, and he's been called the random number generator this year, but I think that if he if he gets kind of going and everything, that it could be a spectacular season. I'm kind of wondering how he will do against and working with Stoner. You know, there's always, no matter what, even if teammates just, you know, like the Spies Maladin split in AMA, where they're just, they almost hate each other's guts, there's still, no matter what, there's a working together aspect, and at the same time, there's always a working against. So that's going to be a fun one next year.
And they're very different personalities, because I think that, you know, Casey Stoner is extremely focused, tight-lipped, all business kind of guy. Marco definitely is much more flamboyant, and although he has definitely got into that focus mode himself as well. I remember, like, a couple of years ago, like, he was posing naked with those boots. Remember that horrible, scary ad? Anyway,
that was pretty scary, actually.
But anyway, so that could be an interesting dynamic there. The really interesting thing is, this is the first year that Ducati is going to have young riders, only young riders. Like, they've always, like, until Casey Stoner came on board, it was all veterans. We had Caparossi, we had Bayless, and we had Checa, and we had Gibernau, all guys who, you know, have been around the block, have been around the GP paddock for a long time, and especially MotoGP paddock. And this is the first. Casey was the first young guy with, you know, basically a rookie, you know, only 1 year. Melandri's been around for a while, but he's still a young guy. So that's really a very different team dynamic, I think, we're going to see next year from what we're used to. And it's going to be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And I think you're right on that one. It might be, I think that Melandri, I mean, when you were first talking about it, I was kind of thinking, well, yeah, Melandri has been around for a while, and he pretty much has achieved sort of a, you know, he's a veteran status. He's been in MotoGP for a while, but he's younger. So yeah, that could be real interesting. And I don't know how either of them are as development riders, to tell you the truth. Not something I'm real familiar with.
Yeah, the word that, well, I don't know the word. I mean, I've just read bits here and heard bits there that that Stoner is a very he's not a development writer like that tweaks things. He's much more of a, I want an entire new, you know, swing arm type of guy, rather than like, hey, let's turn the suspension one notch and go out again. So, and I think Ducati feels very confident, must feel very confident, because they are taking on a young team.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's going to prove to be a good decision in the long run. I mean, they made, whether it was a somewhat of an accident or not, the agreement with Stoner, the deal with Stoner, has just been this match made in heaven. It's worked out so well for them, and you continue to see that all the naysayers or whatever that are saying it's just because Stoner's on, you know, the faster bike and this and that and the other, or whatever they're saying, it's just not true. I mean, there's so many factors playing into play.
Even if he was on the fastest bike, that does not guarantee this kind of a season. I mean, the consistency, the not falling under pressure. I don't care if he's on the fastest bike; he still is having an absolutely amazing season as a rider.
Exactly, I agree. And I mean, safe money right now is for him to have the championship. I mean, it's not locked up, of course. And Rossi actually came back from a larger point deficit last year to you know, almost have it. So it's definitely not in the bag. But if I was going to be placing a bet, I would go with Stoner.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very different year last year. Last year, Rossi was not fighting against just the rider. He was fighting against the machine. The machine is doing very well today. I mean, this tire thing is a different issue, but in general, the machine has been performing very well. There hasn't been any DNFs due to, you know, engine blowouts or whatever.
Right, exactly. It was a completely different season, and every year is the best season ever. I mean, but we've had several incredible seasons in a row. Let's okay. How about what do we know about Dantin?
Well, we don't know that much. So let's move on to the team that we actually do know about, which is HRC.
Good thinking. I was sticking with Ducatis there. You're right. Let's go back to Honda.
So Danny and Hayden are staying, obviously. So there's not much change there.
Now, Danny hasn't signed yet, though, has he?
He has, but I mean, is he going to go somewhere else? Where is he going to go?
Yeah, that's true. But and yeah, you're right. I mean, Danny, that one will come through. I think they're hammering out the final deals on the contract and all that. We had a big long thread going on right on too, and not 100% sure where Huber might gathered a lot of this information. It's pretty good stuff. But one of the things he's saying is that the length of the contract is a possibility with Pedrosa.
Yep.
Honda wants 3 years and Pedrosa doesn't want to go for longer than two.
Right, which is smart on his end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no sense in that's smart from both sides. You know, Honda kind of wants to lock him in and Pedrosa doesn't want to be locked in. So, you know, you can't blame these guys for trying and it'll just come up, push to comes to shove. To be honest with you, on this one, I'd put my money on Honda that they're going to get what they want to a point. They might compromise on two, but they're not going down to one, that kind of a thing.
They might just give him, you know, extra bucks. Who knows?
Yeah. Now, okay. What do you think? Real quick about Nikki. Again, you know, all the naysayers coming through and everything, and with Hayden, and I mean, particularly after this year, the year that he probably wouldn't mind just being able to forget that he's going to get signed again, or that he has been signed again. What do you sort of think of that one?
Well, he is signed for 2008.
I know he is, but so right. What does that make you sort of think? I mean, what is Honda thinking here? What are they trying to attract? Because he's signed through the 2008 season.
I see what you're saying. I mean, you know, he has a tremendous appeal with a big market for Honda, and let's face it, he's a this year's woes are not Nikki Hayden caused woes. He has probably had a little bit of tougher time getting used to the bike than some of the other riders because of his style, but you know, the bike is definitely a problem. So he's not riding all that different than last year. He's just not able to get the bike to do what he wants it to do. So I think that Honda sees in him a good investment for one more year at least, and they think that once they sort the bike out, they're going to have two riders in the top, you know, four or five again.
Yeah, I think that's actually a real fair assessment. And I mean, let's be honest, let's call it, you know, the proverbial spade a spade. I think Hayden got screwed. They made a motorcycle for his teammate who did not win the championship.
Yep.
And, you know, Hayden had been there. Hayden is the epitome of the corporate guy. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I mean, I think he goes out there and he does his best. He does not badmouth his employers, you know, he doesn't bite the hand that feeds him and all of that. And he's an excellent spokesperson for the company. And they basically said, you know, we think we're going to make the motorcycle for this, for Pedrosa. And, I think that was an unfair way to treat Hayden. Now, you know,
not fairness, just Hayden, actually all the Honda riders.
Yes, exactly. That's true. Exactly. And that's, you know, life isn't fair. That's the way things work, but it's still, you know, let's, like I said, Hayden got screwed.
And I think that's a great – actually, you made a great point, which is the fact that he's an amazing spokesperson. He is the one guy you can trust. No matter what happens, he will he is honest. He's not gonna lie, but he is going to stand by his team.
Yes, I agree. He's also picking up plenty of other sponsorships on the side. You're seeing Hayden in a lot of places, and not all of that is explained just because he simply picked up the championship.
Yep.
I don't recall that Robert's got a lot of, you know, I mean, Hayden's got Tissot
And I mean, what other ads am I seeing Hayden in? There's actually a lot of stuff that we're seeing Hayden doing. Let me pick up my latest Road Racing World and flip through it, right?
Well, he's really cute.
Yeah, I think that's true too. He's a good looking guy.
So he's a good, guy.
Charismatic. Let's be manly. He's charismatic. Well, we have a picture of an aircraft carrier in Road Racing World. So, but okay, moving on.
Let's see what else we got. The next team that I think is
a sure thing? Where it's a done deal.
I think that's it. I think now we should talk about Yamaha because they're close to a sure thing there. We've got here are the Yamaha riders that we know of: Jorge De Lorenzo, Valentino Rossi, of course, and James Tosland. And all signs point to Edwards getting another year with Yamaha. So the riders are, I think, keyed in, but we're not really sure what this team structure is going to be, right? Because there's been talk about having Rossi and Jorge have a sharing a garage, and then Tosland and Edwards sharing the Tectoire. So that'll be an interesting move.
To be honest with you on that one, I think that's how it's gonna shake out, unless something really startling happens. Because I've always thought, and I still think, that part of Edwards is sort of his lifesaver, if you will, the thing that's keeping him going, is that Rossi likes him a lot. And so I've always thought that Edwards is going to continue to be Rossi's teammate. But now we have this issue with the tires. We're looking like Rossi's going to Bridgestone, correct?
There's been a lot of suggestions of that. And, I think that he's extremely unhappy about Michelin. He said some things about Michelin that are pretty caustic. And that usually means one thing: Rossi doesn't do anything without kind of thinking it through. So I think that we're going to see him on Bridgestones.
I agree. Barring the extremely unusual idea of the true factory Yamaha team has Rossi riding on Michelins and Edwards, Rossi riding on Bridgestones and Edwards riding on Michelins, which I don't think that's going to happen.
Cito Pons did that with Biaggi and Tamada. So it is doable. But it just seems like a waste of data unless Tectoire and the factory team have a really good relationship. Now, I do want to mention that last week when I talked to Liam, he did actually say that one of the great things about Tectoire and they really are feeding a lot of great information to the factory team. So there is a good relationship between those two teams. It's not like a satellite team that gets there's barely any conversation between the two teams. I think there's a lot, and that means that Edwards being on the Tectoire team might not be all that different than Edwards being on the Fiat team.
Right, that's true. Other than you're going to have the inevitable photo ops and just things where you see Rossi and Edwards hanging out, and you're not going to get as much of that if Edwards is on Tectoire. I guarantee it.
That's true.
I mean, are these the things that Rossi likes? Does Rossi, in fact, let's be brutally honest here. Does Rossi want a teammate that he knows he can beat consistently? Which I'm, sorry, Colin, but that's what he's got right now. With Lorenzo out there, Lorenzo's not going to quite. He's a different dynamic in the whole thing, and he's going to come into MotoGP, and I'm not saying that he's going to come out and beat Rossi and all of that sort of thing, but he's not going to be the sidekick. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to be the clash of the crazy personalities, everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be actually real brutal. I'm almost kind of looking forward to seeing such a thing of Rossi and Lorenzo. And I think out of the two new guys, Lorenzo and Tosland, I think Lorenzo is is to a point the bigger catch. So he's gonna get out of the two deals, Lorenzo will get this sort of what it would be considered the better deal.
Right.
And not
right.
that Toslin, yeah. And I mean, Toslin's going to come out of the gate too. I mean, Yamaha's got it locked up for next year. I mean, if they go with this four rider lineup, which I mean, three of them are done deals and the fourth is virtually assured. So if we see, you got Edwards as an excellent test rider. Rossi is, of course, despite what people are saying, he is still the greatest of all time. And Lorenzo and Toslin are both fantastic, younger, new talents. I mean, Toslin's not that young, but he's younger than the others, and he's learned a lot in the last few years at World Superbike.
And you I wanted to mention something about Toslin. Like people were saying, he should have waited one more year for a Honda ride, and it occurred to me that, you know what, a year for these guys is actually a very costly thing. It's like they age very quickly on the track. One crash could age you 5 years, you know?
Sure, so exactly.
So I think Toslin actually really made it. I think it's a good decision to just get in there and do it.
I agree. And I mean, yeah, everybody was kind of wondering, and it's just, but just because Toslin's been on Honda so long in World Super, for one, Superbike is a completely different ballgame than MotoGP, and Hondas can normally be relied on. Honda can be relied on to come and go out there and somewhat dominate always, but obviously not, you know, it's not a done deal we've just seen this year. And I think that right now, between the two, the Yamaha is the bike to go with. And I think Toslin made a good decision on that one. It's no matter what he did, coming from riding a CBR to riding either a Honda or a Yamaha MotoGP bike is going to be an enormous change. And it's either way. So it's not like it's a black and white decision or something like that. It's kind of like, well, you know, Yamaha's got me a ride right now. I'm going to take it. And I think Toslin made the right decision.
So I just wanted to mention that Toslin coming to Yamaha is virtually assuring that Tech 3 is running Michelin, because I doubt that he would be signing that deal if he was going to be running Dunlops, knowing that the Dunlops are just, you know, even if they do end up making progress, I mean, he doesn't want to be on a bike with that many variables. And that conversation we had last week with Liam mentioning, you know, the Bridgestone thing, kind of confirming what people have been kind of milling about is, you know, this Rossi tire thing. He's been harping about the tires. David Brivio is harping about the tires. Even the only person who has not harped about the tires is Tyrion Burgess.
Yeah, actually, he even talked a little bit about the tires.
He did, but he said it's not the reason why Rossi's not leading the championship.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and that was, you know, that was kind of startling news when we had, you know, Stoner started off with saying, you know, well, he never said anything last year when the Michelin were dominating Bridgestone, and it was odd to see Burgess in effect agreeing with that and somewhat disagreeing with Rossi right there in the news. But whatever, that's old stuff. So why don't we digress real quick? I want to mention this one. So now I think you're right. Dunlop's going to be – they're not going to have Tech 3. So where are we going to see Dunlop? Dunlop will be either on LCR, Konica Minolta, or Team KR.
That's a very good question. You know, I haven't really thought about that one.
It's virtually
hopefully
guaranteed.
Not Dan-teen.
I doubt it. I really do. But the thing is, it could be, though. You never know. The thing is, one thing that Dunlop's going to bring to the table is stacks of free tires.
Oh, that's true, dude. Will the rule extend next year? I mean, we don't know. I'm guessing it will, but because that might be a good chance for somebody to jump on, especially a Michelin shot team that really just had a terrible time this year, to say, you know what, I'm going to give Dunlop a shot because we know that we can get our tires anytime,
yeah,
and there's no limits.
True.
So that's an interesting point. That's a very interesting point. What team could really gain from that?
And they have improved. I mean, you know, like Liam said last week, you know, yes, they're still at the back, but they're not 4 seconds a lap behind. They're, you know, 2 seconds a lap. You know, so they've made significant gains. Dunlop knows how to make tires. I mean, they dominate in 250s, 125s, and many of the Superbike series is around the world. It's just that in MotoGP, basically, you know, Dunlop is spending their money and their effort and their time doing other things. And if they come into MotoGP, if they can divert more of their resources towards MotoGP and play a little bit of catch-up, then they're going to be a lot more competitive. And you have to give them some time. They haven't been in MotoGP that long. And there's been so many other changes involved that it's a little difficult. You can't write Dunlop off. But I do agree, though, that Toseland's not going to be one of the Dunlop test mule. Right. So we're going to see Tectoire on something else. But I do think also that Dunlop will be in MotoGP somewhere, somehow, and actually probably with a relatively competitive team. So that could be an interesting part of Silly Season that we haven't even thought about yet.
Yeah. Okay. We got Suzuki, I think, is the next one. Well, actually, no. Let's talk about Kawasaki. We have not actually had a confirmation of any of the riders there, but it seems that the Pugna is going to stay. Actually, no, wait a second. Hang on a second. All we know about Kawasaki is that Hopper's going there.
Exactly. And I think the rest of it's still up in the air.
Yeah, it is totally up in the air because there's been talk about Ed West getting the ride. There's been talk about possibly Caparossi going there, although we'll talk about Suzuki in a sec.
Right.
And then there's talk about even Roger Lee Hayden.
Yes, and there's even talk about a third bike.
The third bike they already said is not going to happen.
Oh, they did? Oh, yeah. Okay. I missed that one. Yeah. And this is going to be one of the ones that goes down to the wire. If I was... Again, you know, if I was placing a bet and everything, this is what I would be thinking that Kawasaki is thinking. We got Hopper locked up, and the rest of it's going to probably be, oh boy, I would want to say that it's a competition between Dipinia and West, and based on their performance and everything. But you know, I think Kawasaki might take a page out of Honda's book, and they might want to bring in Roger Hayden. So if there, you know, Roger's been doing a lot of stuff with him. He obviously had his wild card ride at Laguna Seca. He's been doing the testing and stuff like that. And I think based on some of that and things that they're shaking out in backroom dealings that we're not going to hear about much, you might see Roger Hayden next year. This is just a hunch that I'm making this up actually right now as I go along. But I could see that one happening.
I think it'd be cool. I think it'd be very cool.
Oh, yeah, it could be way cool. And you'd have another American in MotoGP. You'd have, you know, the two brothers on different teams. It's, yeah, I mean, that would be good stuff. The
all-American team, in fact.
I'm sorry, say again?
It'd be an all-American team.
Yes, it would. That's true, actually. I mean, Hopper's got the sort of Anglo-American thing going on, but yeah, that actually might put a somewhat of a damper in my estimate, though.
Yeah, yeah. The thing about Dupuy is Dupuy is a rider who, if he didn't crash so much, he would actually do extremely well in a championship. He'd probably be like fifth or sixth, you know.
Right.
He this year he has had some good results when he hasn't crashed.
I agree. He's super good, and I mean West is no slouch.
West is no slouch.
Yeah, and you know, particularly it's his skills in the rain are good, and I mean that's always something to be counted for. And considering, you know, he was doing real well in World Super Sport, he's still like fifth in the standings, even though he's been gone for several races. And he's a decent rider. So they've got a wide range of choices there going on, probably any of which they can sign, because that's one thing I have not heard. Is any of the other teams clamoring for Dipinia, West, or Roger Hayden?
There is a blurb about West possibly looking at that team.
Really?
Yeah. But that's the one I would love to run by Liam.
Yeah, if he can tell us, though.
Yeah. Off the record. Okay.
Yes.
So... then we go to Suzuki, where we have one obvious signed person, which is Christopher Mullen. And then we've got this very, very interesting rumor about Lawrence Caparossi and as far as I know, it's a done deal. It's just a matter of, like, you know, finishing up the paperwork.
Exactly. And I agree.
And I think that's very interesting because I don't know what Suzuki's going to get out of Lars Caparossi.
Yeah. I know. A lot of experience.
I'm not saying that. I mean, Lars Caparossi is an amazing rider. I love watching him race. When he was on Ducati last year, he was unbelievable. He was unbelievable the first year. You know, Ducati suffered for two seasons, but he always was in the fight. You know, he did some great stuff at Mugello, even during the crappy season. So he's a great rider, but he's going to a very different type of bike. Same rubber, okay, but different, very different kind of bike, and I just don't see what Suzuki is going to gain from having Loris Caparossi probably for 1 year.
Yeah, Loris is getting older. I guess you'd even say he's in the twilight of his career. You're right. I think to some point, almost, I wonder if it's a little bit that Suzuki was simply caught unaware to a point. I mean, because Suzuki, I think, wanted Hopper. And I think they were honestly, you know, the press reports are not lying. I think they were honestly, you know, basically disappointed when they didn't come to a deal, and it did boil down to money. So I wonder how much that plays into it.
It's a good point. And kind of to play devil advocate to my own comment earlier, both Kawasaki and Suzuki have not had what you'd consider they've not had, you know, true, like, multiple GP winners riding them in a long time. So, you know, Liam last week said that he thinks that the Kawasaki may actually very well be the very best bike on the grid. It's just that it doesn't have the rider to actually prove that it's the best bike on the grid. So maybe Hopper could help there. Suzuki may be in the same kind of position. I think Christopher Wheelan actually, I don't like talking anything bad about the guy because I think he's a great rider, very brave, but he's been a bit of a disappointment as far as I'm concerned. This is now the second year in a Suzuki, and he still hasn't really blown me away.
Shined, yeah.
Except that, you know, I mean, he won a race and stuff, but that was a rain race. You know how I feel about rain racing. And so I think that may be the thing. You bring in a guy who is a proven winner, multiple GP winner, and see if he can push the bike further than Formula or Hopper could push.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, you know, to be honest, again, I almost feel the same way about Hopper that you're talking about Vermeulen, as a guy who's never lived up to his potential. It took him how long to get on the podium?
We could have a whole show about why I think that is.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, and you and I, we've talked about this offline and we've talked about it on the show, and I'm somewhat in agreement. Too much, too fast. There's just so many factors, but whatever. I agree on that one. And actually that's something that you could say that Suzuki is going to get out of this. Let's, you know, their attitude kind of could be, let's see what we can get with, you know, El Veterano on the motorcycle.
Yep.
Cause they have a good bike. They really do.
Yep. Yep.
But, okay, well, let's moving on. Let's go down, to this,
some of
the truly unknowns.
We've got basically all the rest. Well, let's say Team KR is probably the least unknown of the unknowns because,
correct,
we know it's going to be a Roberts,
right? If at all, be honest with you, KR. Yeah. And I need to call Chuck again. You know, like I got a chance to talk to him there a little bit at Laguna Seca. I'd like to give him a call again, but you know, he's not going to be able to tell me that, you know, and I think that we're going to see the same thing that we saw this year, where right up till the end, there's all this doubt and this and that and the other, and then all of a sudden they stay, or maybe they go. And, you know, I don't want to see them go. And I'm sure that if you know, Kenny Roberts Sr. wants to stay. I think he likes being involved. He likes being the last of the real privateers.
Yep.
He, he's got, even though, you know, this year is their year that they want to forget, he's still, you know, I think that they still get a lot of personal satisfaction out of it, and rightly so. Last year they had a spectacular season. This year, not so much. But on the other hand, they have very, very valid reasons for this. And, you know, I don't want to say, oh, they can make the excuse, but, you know, it's kind of almost the point. And so, you know, they might be able to come back next year and do something completely different. So I think that if they can put the money together in some way, shape, or form, they're going to be back. But yes, you're going to see either Curtis or Kenny, probably Curtis, next year.
I mean, I think that Kenny Jr. has proven that his motivation is driven by it's a vicious circle for him. If he doesn't get the results, his motivation lacks. He doesn't get the results, and it just peters out. So that's
I agree.
That's not the kind of rider you want. If the bike needs to be developed and needs to be pushed, you know. And if Curtis is willing to do that, then Curtis should be the rider.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I mean, the fact that, you know, and I mean, again, this is somewhat of a hunch. You know, they might come back next year with two riders. Who knows? If they can work the engine deal out with Honda, and if they can, you know, scrabble together some funding and all of that, they'll have two riders. But if they only have one, that it's probably going to be Curtis, and it's probably, you know, it's because of the family thing and this and that. Is Curtis necessarily the best choice? Probably not, but he's capable. I mean, I people were saying, particularly after the qualifying incident in Laguna, that, but I think Curtis deserves his MotoGP ride. Maybe not, you know, as much as Valentino Rossi or something like that, but he certainly, you know, it's not like he's some, you know, it's not like they're putting me on that damn motorcycle out there. You know what I'm saying? It deserves to be in MotoGP. And there's a lot of other factors I'm sure that can play into the whole thing once you have the fact that dad owns the team.
Right.
And it's not just a, you know, I'm going to give my son a ride. It's not just a, you know, God knows what kind of bargain they're getting or anything like that. There's a whole lot of factors when you have a small company, basically, and he's got his own kid riding the bike. I think that it works out for them, and I think that next year we're going to see more out of Team KR. We might even see more out of Team KR this year. I sure hope so.
Yeah, well, we'll see. You know, this is the weekend where we're going to, I think, find out a lot about what's happened during the so-called break.
Right. Okay, moving on, because we are running out of time. Team Konica Minolta, say.
Oh, I don't think
they're gonna... Maybe I should have gone with LCR first, because they're...
Let's do LCR, because we know a lot about LCR.
Yeah, not so much, but yeah.
Well, there's the Dovizioso rumor.
Yeah, you think... Oh, wait, is this a done deal? Dovizioso's going to LCR?
I believe so. The rumor is that he's been approached, and... We know that he wants to come into MotoGP, although if I were him, I would take advantage of Lorenzo not being in the 250s and go ahead and win his championship again. So
I agree.
Before coming over.
As a young, talented rider that's doing so well in 250s and has a promising future, the last thing he should do is go to to LCR. I mean, although you could have said the same thing about Stoner.
But exactly.
Look at Stoner's 2006 season. It was a freaking disaster. And
it was not a disaster, though, because if it wasn't for the crashes, he was actually doing really well.
Yeah, except for the crashes.
Except for the crashes. So the thing is, I think that the team actually did support him in a good way. Here's something interesting. I think that the Dunlop tires that you run on the 250s have a much... similar quality to the Bridgestones in the MotoGP class. And that is why Stoner struggled when he came over from the 250s to LCR, and why he felt at home again when he got on the Bridgestones.
That's actually a super, super good theory. And I mean, yeah, rethinking it, you know, maybe I shouldn't say that LCR is a dead end, because, I mean, they're a young team in MotoGP, which... is going to mean a lot. So, yeah, okay, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm being unfair. But I still think that for Dovizioso, I would say that's a mistake.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Dovizioso should stay in 250s there wouldn't be, there's not going to be that much competition. Well, the same kind of competition. There'll probably be other guys who will shine, but you're not going to have Lorenzo. You're probably not going to have DeAngelis, who we'll talk about in a sec. And he could get his championship and then go over to GP. He's still a young guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, okay. So that's someone sounds like a done deal. So let's move on.
Well, it's not a done deal. We just don't know. I mean, I don't think it's going to be Carlos Checa running an LCR. That's definitely the done deal part of it.
So, and in effect, that unfortunately means that Carlos is probably done.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. You never know. I mean, yeah, he's a lot of these guys keep coming back. But.
Okay. Konica. Wow. What a black hole. Black hole of talent.
Yes.
And then I don't mean black hole of talent as in the people that they get are talentless. It's just that it just seems to suck out all the talent out of them. Amazing yeah. riders. I mean, I think Tamada was a great rider, and I think that Nakano is a fantastic talent.
I think Nakano's actually better than Tamada. More talent. Yeah. And what have you got going on there? You have the bizarre sort of Japanese-Italian connection. You have, I don't know, they never seem to quite get it right. Like you say, it's this sort of the black hole, you know, and once a rider goes there, you can, they just disappear.
Yeah.
And it's a damn shame, actually. So I don't know what's going to happen, though, next year with them. This yeah. is one thing I haven't heard much about. I mean,
I really don't know much about it. I've even heard rumors that there's not going to be a Konica team, but I think most, if anything, it's going to be, maybe Nakano will just extend and who knows, maybe they'll be on Bridgestones. Maybe the entire grid is going to be on Bridgestones. Who knows? Okay, let's go to Grassini. I think that Grassini's by far, to me, the most interesting, because I think it's an amazing team. It's always been an amazing, very competitive team. I mean, obviously, during the Santa Gibernau years, a team that outshone HRC.
Yeah.
And it looks like Tony Ellis is going to keep his ride there. And then there's rumors of Alex DeAngelis taking the other seat, which is, I think Grassini is extremely good himself, not just the team, but he himself is very good at bringing in riders who, this is going to be pretty mean, but are troubled riders.
Who need development.
And then turning them into really extremely competitive riders. I think he did it to Gibernau. I think he did it to Melandri, and Alex DeAngelis is a perfect target. Alex DeAngelis is one of these riders who's a little too hot-tempered on the racetrack, makes crazy mistakes, very similar to the way Melandri used to ride, and he somehow tempers these guys into real competitive riders.
I agree. Yeah, and it's a bit like Alberto Puig and the Cito Pons to a point. I mean, all these guys, you get these former stars in their own right, and they start the team, and it's just something happens. But Grassini has I agree, he's just developed it to a real art form,
yeah.
And it's going to be neat to see him up there. DeAngelis, because that would be a good thing.
He's a very talented rider, obviously, and his only downside is that he gets a little too emotional on the track. That's my guess.
Yeah, and I think to a point this year in 250s, he's overshadowed by his teammate or these kind of things and hand-wringing and all of that. But, yeah, those are the kind of things that Grassini can work out.
Yep.
So, yeah, and that actually will be a good one. Plus, especially if you have him up there with Lorenzo on the same team, not same team, but same series again. So that would be good stuff.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Not exactly. Exactly the best of friends.
Nope. Nope.
Oddly enough. Does Lorenzo have any friends in the 250 paddock? I kind of don't think so.
Oh, there's the Lorenzo double that showed up one time. I think that's his buddy. Did you see that race? I don't remember
no.
which race it was. I think it was possibly China at the end of the race. Another Lorenzo ran out onto the track, and there was a little bit of confusion. And by the time they got on the bike, we had no idea which Lorenzo was on the bike or which Lorenzo was off running around in the kiddie litter. So it's pretty funny. And then the guy in the kiddie litter took his helmet off.
I'm saving some of the 250s. I've been following the 250 real well. Actually, 125s I'm saving for the off season. I've got stacks of them on the DVR that I haven't even watched yet, and I haven't been paying attention to the results and all that. Even though it's a great series, all these series are good stuff.
Yeah,
we're seriously running out of time, Jules. We said 20
one
minutes.
One more team. One more team. Dan
one
team.
More team. I know.
So it's a Dantin.
Dantin. You know, saving the.
The Haas.
I got to digress. Every time we call him the Hoff, which is his nickname, and it's the one true nickname, and I get this mental picture of David Hasselhoff.
There's
a whole German connection.
The first time
and,
I heard
and
that,
it's just,
yeah.
But whatever. Alex Hoffman, the Hoff.
The Hoff, I think, is his only – I think he had a very good season this year, and but he's very hurt. His I hate to say it, but his card in the MotoGP has been his nationality.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much longer that can be played out.
Yeah, but these are important things, though. And I mean, it's all about bills and paying the bills and getting sponsorships and et cetera, et cetera. We all know that MotoGP has money issues going on right now, sponsorship issues in general, not just, any one particular team and all of that sort of thing. So these are important factors to think of. And yes, he's been plagued with injuries this year.
That's the thing that I'm not saying that he's not a good enough rider to deserve a ride. I just think that he may be approaching that Sete Gibernau stage where halfway through the season next year he may just say, "Okay, he has another fall, breaks a collarbone, he breaks his arm. Who knows? He's going to be so injured that he might not be." I think it would be it's a risk now. It's not just a result risk because he's proven that he can ride up there. I think it's a, Liam's going to probably just say, you guys are just so wrong about all this stuff.
He might be. And the thing, the whole thing with Liam, of course, is he can't tell us everything.
Yeah.
And then there are things that he tells us in confidence. And yeah.
What about Barros? I mean, if they can keep Barros, by all means, keep Barros. The guy is proving he is exactly what everybody hoped. On that team, he is a leader, a great developer of the bike, and I think we're going to see another good result from him this year, at least once.
Well, what do you think though that of the chances of them coming back with the same team? Just to throw something out there.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're having a good season. Why not just keep the train going?
Right.
Except, I mean, I just it really all depends on how Hoff recovers from his injuries.
Yeah, which is still somewhat up in the air.
Yeah, we'll find out.
If you want to talk about who this might want to consider looking at, Chaz Davis. I thought he did real well considering. I mean, Friday morning he was riding in Super Sport, AMA Super Sport. And Friday afternoon, all of a sudden, he has a MotoGP ride. And I think he did respectably well.
He did. But you know what? There's other riders out there that are looking for rides that I think are more likely to get them. Like, I don't think we're going to see Tamara next year. But we've got Gentoli. And he's probably going to lose his ride on Yamaha.
Which I think is a shame.
Yes. But he might be a good fit for a team like this.
Yeah, that's true. And again, you've got the nationality thing. He would, at that point, we have a vagary going on with Dupinier,
right.
But you've got the French connection. And, you know, Guintoli might be able to retain a ride somewhere just simply based on that.
Yep. And he's not a bad rider. I mean, he's a fighter.
No, I agree. He's been doing a lot with on those Dunlops that right there, you know, uncompetitive tires, and he's doing okay. I'm sure Alex Hoffman fans are not, you know, necessarily real thrilled with Guintoli right now, but it's these things happen.
I mean, honestly, I really think that when there's a certain point where a rider has been hurt so much that it just becomes literally too painful for him to compete, you know?
Yeah. Sure.
That, I don't know if you saw the photo of his hand that Liam posted on the Moto Liam.
I did, blog. With the Frankenstein stitches, yeah.
I mean, you know, that's brutal.
It's right, brutal. It is. It's brutal.
Brutal injury, I mean, on a very important part of the, you know, the bike human interface.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, this is a this is a team that's one of the more up in the air teams, which, considering their performance this year, you know, solid performance from a satellite team that didn't do all that well last year, that's not doing all that well financially, yet they're coming out there and they're doing well in the point standings. And for them to be so up in the air as far as next year's rider lineup is, I don't know. I guess it's not necessarily all that unusual, but it just sort of strikes you as a little bit like, wow, it shouldn't be that way. But it is.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, we went through the teams. The only thing I wanted to mention was, are there any riders that are definitely leaving? I think Tamara's out. Who else would be losing a ride for good?
Kenny Roberts Jr.
Kenny Roberts Jr., yep. And Carlos Checa.
Yeah, I think we can say goodbye to Carlos Checa, although I wouldn't doubt, I would
we
not
say that
be surprised.
Every year, and somehow he, you know, he ends up with a ride.
He comes back. He's the bad penny that keeps turning up.
Well, he's not a bad penny.
No, exactly. Just, I know he's not. It's just I'm throwing that out there as a snarky remark. But I think that if anything, though, you might possibly see him in World Supers. I be honest with you, if he doesn't get a ride in MotoGP, he's
and going all the way back to that podcast with Michelle Dove. That means that he's going to the middle-aged series.
Yeah, to a point. But well, whatever. Okay. Why don't we go ahead and wrap it up? I think it's been an excellent talk. It's always fun talking to Jules. I like it, and I hope that I think that we had a good silly season commentary here, and it'll be fun to see what we're talking about, how right we are or how wrong we are.
I'm guessing we're wrong on a couple of points.
What's that?
I'm guessing everyone's going to be very surprised in a few weeks about some of these things.
Especially
the guys coming up from the 250s. That's going to be the most interesting story to me.
Yes, I agree. And I mean, you know, one thing about MotoGP, the pureness of the sport, the purity of the sport and blah, 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 is that it's not quite so obvious like it is in Formula One, where basically the only reason this guy's got that ride is because he brought a sack load of money to the table.
Right.
And that's one thing we don't yet have in MotoGP, at least not quite so above board. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I mean, there's totally backroom dealings and there's issues and there's things where the rider is only riding for, you know, the purse or side deals or what have you. But it's not like, you know, hey, I'm Carlos Checa and I've got $10 million and I'm going to throw it your way if you let me ride your motorcycle. It's not that obvious yet.
Yeah. Well, we had a ride like that last year.
Yeah, we did. Shit.
Let's just not even mention his name. Anyway.
Yeah. I can't remember his name, so it's just
Jose.
As well. I know Jose, yes, Cardoso.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, so, I mean, Rossi's got a big tax bill, and Caparossi's got a big tax bill, but I don't think that's why they're getting on the bike again.
I don't think Rossi's going to have a problem paying the tax bill, to be honest with you. Figure it out. But all right, whatever. It's been cool. It's been real. Why don't we call it a night, and I will talk to you later, Jules. right. Like I said, long show today, but I thought it was a good one. I hope you enjoyed it a lot. That is going to do it for today's show, and we will be back next week. Again, do not forget, Brno is on this weekend, and Jules and I, and hopefully a bunch of other people, will probably be watching the race on MotoGP.com live at 5 a.m. on Sunday morning. And why don't you join us in the chat room that we have going on? There's a link on MotoGPOD.com on the left side is chat room, and there's a link to the same chat room at right on two. So basically you find this chat room. It's a sort of a flash deal. It's set up, it's kind of shared between MotoGPOD.com and right on two.com. And we'll, a bunch of us will be in there just kind of, you know, saying, wow, did you see that? You know, that sort of thing, real low key, just kind of fun. And, you know, make a few comments or whatever you like of, the chat room sort of a thing. It's kind of fun. So I encourage you to check that out. Don't forget about it. And other than that, we'll talk to you next week. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.